balancing economic development with quality of life in communities throughout Maine. Growth, development, progress, sprawl. These words can mean different things to different people, and they often depend on the context. From big box stores to wind farms, hotels to apartment buildings, transportation centers to mussel farms, most new projects in Maine face at least some opposition. Those who believe in development often criticize those who are against it, saying they are engaging in NIMBYism, you know, not in my backyard. But those who fight new projects are often worried about preserving the quality of life that makes their town and Maine so special. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we'll discuss the competing pressures facing Maine communities when it comes to development and growth. How to move Maine forward without losing its sense of place. Are you engaged in this debate in some way? Maybe in your own backyard? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. It's a dilemma facing many Maine communities. How to balance growth with quality of life. Often developers and community activists can seem to be working against each other rather than together. Today we're going to discuss ways in which some groups are working to move from NIMBY, not in my backyard, to YIMBY, yes, in my backyard. With me in the studio, Elizabeth Bepley. I got her Bepley. Elizabeth Bepley, Beth Bepley. She's an environmental attorney with BCM Environmental and Land Law. I'm sorry about that. Nancy Smith, Executive Director of Grow Smart Maine. And on the line with us from Mix One Studios in Boston, Jesse Kanson-Beninov. He is the founder and chairman of A Better Cambridge and is the keynote speaker at this year's MERIDA conference. As always, we want to hear from you. Have you been involved in community efforts to address growth and development? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. It's such an interesting conversation. Thank you all for being here, because I think a lot of people encounter these issues on a very small local level, that this is not a big conversation, a big part of people's lives until something happens or is going to happen in their community. And then suddenly they begin thinking about it. And so it's so interesting to me to have the three of you who are looking at what's going on in different communities come together to talk about this. And Beth, I want to start with you with just a broad question. I'm going to ask you guys, Beth and Nancy, to explain to us what would even be the reasons to grow. Why do we need to be pro-growth? And then, Nancy, I'm going to say, what are reasons not to grow? What's the counter-argument? And not, I know that you can both argue both sides of the coin, but I'm just going to make you do it that way. Go ahead, Beth.
Sure. I'm happy to start off with what I think is the positive side. Why grow? Well, first of all, I think we have to assume that growth, to some extent, is inevitable. So there will always be some level of development that's going on in a given community. And so it's going to happen. So then the question becomes, how does it happen in a way that is responsive to the community, responsive to the needs of the community, and done in a thoughtful manner? Why do we want it? We want it because it helps our quality of life, quite frankly. If we don't have a level of growth, then we have a community that stagnates. So that's sort of in brief the reasons why I think we should think about this in a more global fashion. And when I say global, I mean not just, you know, the city of Portland or the greater Portland area, but statewide, New England-wide, and nationwide.
All right, Nancy, your turn. What are the concerns about growth? I'm guessing impact on services in a community is a big one.
Well, there are a lot of concerns. I think starting to build on what Beth had said, though, the point is if there is no growth, there is stagnation. Oftentimes, community members may say, I don't want change. I want it to be just the way I remember it or just the way it is. And that's really not possible. Change is always happening. And what we're looking for is a way to manage it so we get the outcomes we want. Now, the concerns that come oftentimes relate to change. Again, if you're looking at sprawl, if I'm a select board member and I'm looking at the cost of the municipal budget and there's growth coming in the way of subdivisions that are adding to the services that we need to provide and therefore bringing up property taxes, I'm concerned. If it changes school population, there are people, some communities are striving for more students in their schools. Others are concerned we'll have more costs associated with that. The other, I think, is, again, loss of quality of place. If we have growth in a way that doesn't respect the reasons that we all are choosing to live in Maine, then there's going to be a downside to it. So rather than dwell on the downside, at Grow Smart Maine, we really try to work with communities on how can you have an impact, knowing that change is coming. Again, in so much of Maine, change does not mean growth right now, but how do you engage in making it happen in a way that you know that you'll keep what you love about your community and respond to growth when it comes?
Jesse, you're going to be the keynote speaker next week at the Merida Conference, and it is Maine's first conference on YIMBY. So explain to me what that means. What is YIMBY?
Yeah, YIMBY is a growing movement here in the United States. Obviously means yes in my backyard. It's a movement that's really come out of some of the high opportunity but high cost cities that face a real lack of housing and have had restrictive housing growth for many years. It's centered in places like Boston, where I am, San Francisco, Los Angeles, Austin, but other communities around the country, certainly Portland, places like Minneapolis, other of the mid-sized cities have begun to experience some challenges as population has started to move back into cities after a century of focus on suburban development and suburban sprawl. YIMBYs, we like to refer to ourselves as the new integrationist movement. We are concerned with this history of sprawl in the United States, which resulted in significant racial segregation of American communities and regions, as well as massive environmental destruction. For many years, our federal and state policies prioritized the development of sprawling suburbs primarily for the benefit of middle and upper middle class white families, while divesting from urban areas that were concentrated heavily by communities of color, immigrants, and working class folks. We think that was a real problem with the insatiable appetite for suburban sprawl over the last 70 years. And of course, our environment has suffered as we've developed single-use suburbs that rely on extensive use of private automobiles without enough users for public transportation systems and the like. So the YIMBY movement is trying to address these concerns by really focusing on development of housing in American cities, existing cities around existing infrastructure to create opportunity for all families to be able to live in places like Boston or Cambridge, where I live, Portland, and other cities where people are beginning to move back to. I think that the problem is we have not developed enough housing in most cities across the country because people were moving to the suburbs. Now, as people are moving back into the city, we still don't have enough housing, and that's causing a lot of concerns around gentrification and displacement.
On the line with us now is Paul Peck. He's an attorney and real estate developer and is the board president of Merida, the Maine Real Estate and Development Association. We talked about Merida's spring conference a week from today about YIMBYism or NIMBYism or both. This is called YIMBY next week. Paul, thank you for joining us today. Briefly, tell us about the real estate market in Maine at the moment. If you're in Portland, you're seeing apartment buildings going up everywhere, but that's not the case everywhere, is it?
Well, that may not be, but the real estate market statewide, Jennifer, is really, really strong. And we at Merida and me and my development work, we look at that market closely. Tourism, seafood, downtown, school system, grocery stores, retailers, employers, they're all looking at the real estate market and looking at the real estate environment. And they make their decisions based on, you know, what to buy and what to sell. In some respects, directly related to the market, we see how housing prices affect recruitment of talent for our businesses. So the real estate market's looked at very closely by us at Merida and by me personally, and we're going to be rolling out our index at our spring conference next week, and it's pretty good news. The real estate market's strong. I'd like to just to give you a little sneak peek of our index. We're showing our index above 90, which will be the second year in a row, which is we haven't seen that since 2006. So the market is strong right now. The real estate market. It's strong not just in southern Maine, not just in Portland, but it's strong in all the urban areas all around the state, including Bangor and Biddeford and Lewiston, Auburn and Augusta and Rockport. all these communities have nice city centers and downtown walkable areas, and they're growing, and we're excited about that. The commercial sector is strong. Square footage leasing has been going up. Businesses are growing. And people are starting to think about and actually building some office buildings, and that's really exciting and new. We're seeing really strong employment growth for the first time in some time. So there's a lot of projects that are under construction or going to be under construction, so our employment growth has really helped. But we're a little concerned about employment growth because of the lack of available and skilled labor to build our buildings. And we think that may lead to somewhat of a depression in construction because of the increased costs. And so we're working on that at Merida with partners and hoping to come up with some strategy to fill that worker gap. The residential market is strong, really all around the state right now, in mostly the urban areas and the suburban areas around the urban centers. There's not enough inventory right now. Prices are strong. And we hope that there's going to be more construction. But again, the downward pressure on construction is in some part to the worker gap and the increased cost of construction. Interest rates are stable, so we think that's a great sign, and we're seeing good growth. So overall, I think the market is strong, Jennifer.
Paul, let me ask you this. We talk about these big apartment buildings that are under construction in Portland. Do we have a sense of how many housing units statewide are going to become available in the coming year?
I do not have that number, Jennifer. I know there's probably a couple hundred under construction right now in Portland of apartments, and there's probably more condominiums under construction than that in the Portland area. But the new construction, brand new construction, is difficult in other parts of the state due to the costs of construction. So we're seeing renovations being made all across the state to some older buildings, innovative ways to redo older buildings in some of the city centers. So that's excellent, and that adds inventory. New construction of apartment buildings and condominiums is not as strong in other parts of the state as it is here in the southern Maine market.
All right. Well, Paul Peck, thank you so much for joining us. I understand you have to go. Developer and president of Merida, the Maine Real Estate and Development Association. Beth, you were nodding. You have a sense of how much new housing is coming on the market this year?
I can respond to that, at least with respect to Portland. I can't speak to statewide. In the city, we had more than 600 new residential units currently under or recently completed construction. Planning and Urban Development Department permitted more than 200 additional units of new housing in calendar year 2016, and 800 units of housing across the city are currently in the development pipeline. So that gives you a sense. That's at least with respect to Portland.
All right. I want to ask you, Jesse, you're talking about the focus of the YIMBY movement really in cities that people are returning to. As you well know, that there's only a couple cities in Maine, three cities if you count them, and they are not large cities. Portland's 65,000-70,000 people, and a lot of people come to Maine because they want to live in a rural setting. We had a guest on Monday who was a retired professor who couldn't wait to settle to a farm and grow his own crops. How does the YIMBY movement apply to Maine?
Yeah, I think one of the key piece is that by focusing on the production of housing and mixed-use communities where people have an opportunity to live, work, and play within the cities that they live in, it really helps preserve some of the important natural resources and rural fields of surrounding communities. You know, one of the biggest losses of farmland and greenfield in the United States, natural resources, over the last century was the massive appetite for suburban sprawl. So as we begin to give people opportunity to live in cities, we have the opportunity then to preserve the surrounding area. Obviously, Maine has some of the most amazing natural resources in all of New England and really across the country. And by focusing on growth and housing opportunity for all families who want to live in Maine cities and who do live in Maine cities, it preserves those opportunities surrounding the cities and in the rest of the state.
Nancy.
I would love to build on what Paul was saying and what Jesse is saying with that, the Maine statewide perspective, I'm learning about yummyism as we're having this conversation, and how closely it aligns with smart growth. And smart growth, of course, is a set of principles related to how we develop our communities in a way that encourages the growth without losing quality of place, exactly what we're talking about. So Paul's comment about workforce and what Jesse is saying about the draw towards cities, the good news is the variety of people that we want to stay in Maine and to come to Maine are all generally looking for the same thing, the walkable downtowns, the beautiful natural areas, interesting, safe places to go. And that communities don't have to choose whether they want to attract millennials, whether they want to accommodate and make comfortable their elders, or we want our kids to raise our grandchildren here. They're all looking for the same things in their community. Some want the cities. And for Maine, the urban-rural, or when you're looking at the downtowns, it really comes to villages, too. So I live on Main Street in Monmouth, which is not a city, but I was drawn to the center of the community for exactly the same reasons that people are drawn to Portland, but on a different scale. And then the final piece, when we're talking about needing all of these pieces in our workforce, we need young people, we need elders to stay in the workforce longer, we need immigrants. And all the work that we're talking about will make this an accommodating and welcoming place for them as well.
So let's talk about where this gets difficult, which is when projects are proposed. We have a lot right now happening that we can talk about. There's the cold storage unit that's possibly on the Portland waterfront, the ocean wind development off Monhegan Island. South Portland has a couple affordable housing projects that are being opposed. There's a big tract of land in Portland off of Stroudwater that may be developed. And there may be people listening to this conversation who, in philosophy, agree with all three of you and say, yes, we need more housing in our cities, but I don't want it in that beautiful field where I have been walking my dog for 20 years, where I watch the fox run across the field with the squirrel, where my children built fairy houses when they were little. You're smiling and nodding, Beth.
I am. And the reason I'm smiling and nodding is this is exactly what we hear. I serve on the Portland Planning Board. I'm the current chair. And frequently when there's a project that is proposed in or near in the proximity of a neighborhood where a situation like that currently exists, there's a lot of emotion. Land tends to bring out emotion in people. They have very emotional reactions. And that's understandable. That's totally understandable. This is where we live and work, and it's very, very important. What I think the tension is trying to engage people in the dialogue about how they can give voice to that emotion, but also participate in the process and understand that if they engage directly with the developer, if they engage in the public forums, if they engage proactively in a dialogue, we can reach a really good resolution and result for everybody that allows for very thoughtful growth and protection for some of those aspects people find so important and important to quality of life. So I can give you some specific examples and concrete examples of where I think dialogue has furthered those goals and accomplished those goals. But I don't want to get into details that are very Portland specific, because we want to kind of keep this discussion on a broader.
But one would be fine.
Well, I think maybe the one that's in the Stroudwater area is an example, and it's on Westbrook Street. And right now, just in terms of this, the stage of that particular proposal, is it's for a zone change. The zone change that was proposed and brought forward before the planning board was from an R1 to an R3 and an ROS. All of those numbers and letters mean residential 1 versus residential 3. That relates to the lot size, a minimum lot size that a house, a single family dwelling, can be built on. ROS means recreational open space. What came out of the dialogue, it started with a developer coming forward with a change to R3 from R1, which is a larger lot size, larger homes, evolved into a discussion directly with a lot of people in the community who were concerned about losing open space. And the developer is committed to putting aside a section of that property for open space. That's a positive development. So that's one concrete example of how the dialogue furthered those goals, and their goals that are shared citywide.
Jesse, I want to hear your example, but we're late for our first break, so we're going to go to the first break, and then when we come back, we'll hear Jesse's example, and we will go to your calls and questions. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Patriot Subaru, providing sales, service, and accessories on new and pre-owned all-wheel drive Subarus on Route 1 in Saco, and the Orthopedic Institute of Central Maine, providing joint replacement, spine surgery, and hip fracture care. JointsME.org.
You can take my body, you can take my bones, you can take my blood, but not my soul. You
on the next Fresh Air, Rhiannon Giddens. Her new album, Freedom Highway, includes original songs based on slave narratives. It's just been nominated for Album of the Year by the Americana Music Association. She'll perform in the studio. Join us.
Take my body, take my bones, you can take my blood, but not my soul.
Join us for Fresh Air coming up at 7 o'clock tonight. The first season of High School Quiz Show Maine is here. Watch teams compete to be the smartest in the state as they face off on history, science, math, current events, popular culture, and other academic topics. Be watching Maine Public Television for the fun, Thursday evenings at 8 with a rebroadcast Sunday afternoons at 5:30. This week, Bonnie Eagle from Standish takes on Falmouth. If you'd like more information from who is competing to how your school can compete next year, visit mainepublic.org and click on television.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, Doing Development Right. In the studio with me, Nancy Smith, Executive Director of Grow Smart Maine. Beth Bupley is an environmental attorney with BCM Environmental and Land Law. And on the line with us from Boston, Jesse Canson Beninov. He is founder and chairman of A Better Cambridge. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Jesse, it's your turn. Sorry we had to go to a break. Give us an example of when community involvement can turn a project that is originally opposed into something that's welcome.
Well, you know, what I wanted to say before the break was that I think from the perspective of YIMBYs, the Yes in My Backyard movement, when it comes to building housing in cities, we recognize that different cities have different challenges. So the intense pressures for growth and 40,000 new housing units that we need here in the metro Boston area is not necessarily reflective of what's happening in Portland or the other cities there. When it does come to developing housing and creating more housing opportunity for all families across the income spectrum in cities, even the smaller cities like Portland, we want to make sure that it's done in a way that involves the community. And I think there's a misperception sometimes that developers or that the YIMBY movement, even independent of developers, is coming for your home to turn your home into an apartment building. I think there's different ways to go about creating more housing. It may be focusing on infill development that's taking underutilized parcels. That's not necessarily a park or another public resource like that, but a vacant lot that's maybe gathering trash or used not even for parking, just for, you know, abandoned cars, and finding opportunity to turn that into housing and mixed-use opportunity that benefits the community. We also love to look at industrial properties for maybe industry that has since left and see how we can turn those into unique housing opportunities, maybe affordable housing for artists or other communities like that. Here in the Boston area, the city of Newton, which is a large inner-ring suburb right next to Boston, I'm sure many listeners know of it, is an incredibly expensive place that has really opposed housing development for many years, multifamily and affordable housing development, despite the fact that many advocates, not just YIMBYs, but affordable housing advocates, recognize how important it is for Newton to do its part in creating housing, given its proximity to the urban core of Boston and the jobs that are there. Recently, YIMBY activists in Newton fought for a backyard unit, an accessory dwelling unit ordinance, to allow property owners of single-family homes to create an additional unit in their backyard if it's attached to their primary structure. So, you know, I don't know the number of potential new units offhand that can be created, but given that Newton is a sizable suburb, there's the opportunity to create thousands of new housing units in a relatively small scale. So it's not always about building large multifamily housing or towers like we may need in my town of Cambridge.
And Nancy, I want to ask, you were talking a lot about housing.
Yes.
But there are a lot of things that people oppose in Maine, have opposed in my experience as a reporter in Maine. We mentioned the proposed cold storage unit on the Portland waterfront, but getting the cruise ship terminal built in Portland took a lot of time, and there was a lot of opposition to that. The wind farms in every community where almost every community where wind farms have been proposed, they have been there's been opposition to them. The Amtrak station where trains.
Right, the overnight in Brunswick.
The overnight in Brunswick. Yeah. Yeah. There's, it seems almost as though when anything is proposed, it is also opposed.
I would hate to think that that's the truth. I think sometimes that's what we remember. There are some things that move together well. But again, I think to Beth's point earlier, when change is coming in a community, you're talking about people's homes, and they will take it personally, and that's human nature, and that's okay. The key is to allow, maybe to provide them with the tools to be able to engage effectively, engage early, as we had talked about. Developers, for the most part in Maine, are members of the community. These are not the bad guys. These are people who earn their living by creating beautiful places within Maine, and they want to work with you. So when people are initially concerned, and that's a natural reaction, what Grow Smart Maine tries to do is show them how they can engage in a way that is going to be productive and that they'll be happy with the results, knowing, again, that change oftentimes is going to come.
We'll go to Mike, who's calling from Bass Harbor. Hi, Mike. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Thank you very much. First, I just want to praise Grow Smart Maine. I think it's one of the best organizations that exists in this state to advise communities about how to do things well.
Thank you.
One of the things that I'm always been concerned about is there are so many well-intentioned regulations that affect what can be done, especially to existing structures, that it certainly seems like it pushes development out of city centers and into suburbs, that it's much more cost-effective from a developer standpoint to buy raw land and turn that into office space or into apartments because, in many cases, zoning and safety requirements are very stringent about how wide hallways have to be or how steep stairs can be and things like that. And I'd be curious about, you know, what's being done to potentially give communities much more flexibility in dealing with the particular circumstances of existing properties. And I'll take my answer offline. Thank you.
That's a great question, and a couple of points come to mind. And first off, thank you for the kudos to Grow Smart. I appreciate that. When we look at some of the basic ways to get things done well, it's reasonable for developers to expect that the regulations are going to be predictable, fair, and cost-effective, and we want them to be effective. One of the ways that Grow Smart has really worked hard with many others, including Merida, is the Maine Uniform Building and Energy Code. That uniformity of rules is very helpful. I actually was serving in the legislature when that passed back in, I think, 2010. And the Retail Lumbermen's Association was in favor because they were, in fact, being the code enforcement officers because the rules were different in every town. So some level of predictability town to town matters. I wonder if the concern comes from a great misperception of the codes that relate to the reuse of existing buildings. There are mechanisms. Number one, people, I think, hear that they can't do things and never investigate it. There is a board that oversees MUBEC, the Uniform Building Code, and it's worth investigating with them. And I agree completely with him. There's no greener building than one that we've revamped that already exists and is in place. It's also a great job creator in Maine. And there are examples across the state, whether it's Livermore Falls, Eastport, Dover Foxcroft. There are great places where this is happening. So we always, I think, are looking for ways to help communities manage growth and change. There's got to be a balance of that consistency with accommodations at the local level.
All right. Thank you for your call. I'm going to go to an email from Jason, and I'm going to truncate this because it's a long email. Jason believes that what's going on in Booth Bay is an example of something that's going wrong. He calls it a case study in how this can go badly. He's talking about Coastal Maine Botanical Gardens, which is creating space for its parking lots, and he says that it has clear-cut, bulldozed, and blasted wetland to do so. He says Booth Bay's ordinances are poorly written, and Coastal Maine Botanical Gardens has taken advantage of that vague language to push through its agenda. I suspect you all are not experts on this project, but Nancy, is Jason's point that when a town has vague language in its ordinances, that that can pose a big problem?
It sounds like that's the case there. I know somewhat about the area and what's happening there because, again, we pay attention to things going on across the state. We made an initial inquiry about helping on the Booth Bay Peninsula because there was so much change happening there and encouraging the communities to work together. That was probably 3 or 4 years ago, and that didn't move forward. I would love to have a chance again to talk with them about how we might be able to help. But, again, I think it comes back to the power of the planning board, where the earlier caller was concerned about not enough local control. This is a case where it really is the select board and the planning board who can have an impact on those ordinances and how they're interpreted.
All right. We have an email from Zach. Please comment on the role of parking and public transit in new development and growth, especially in denser urban areas. Also, do the panelists consider parking as a benefit when employers provide it to their employees? Beth, do you have an opinion?
A benefit?
Yeah, that's what he asked.
Well, I think parking, certainly parking, transportation, those are issues that any developer has to consider. And it is certainly in the city of Portland and in the work that I do as a lawyer, when I work with developers in Maine, New Hampshire, or Vermont, and I practice across all three states. A developer does have to consider transportation, and in most permitting processes, they have to have a transportation plan of some sort, transportation management plan. The parking issue is a very sensitive one in the city of Portland, for a variety of reasons, not the least of which is that it's a challenge. Is it a benefit when an employer provides it to an employee? That depends entirely on the geography in which you're located. I would say if an employer is coming into Portland and says they can provide parking for their employee, well, it depends on where the employees are living. Are they located close to the to where the employer is located? Well, then hopefully they're going to be walking or biking or using other transit modes.
Sure. And Jesse, I know that this is an area in which it's a very different story in Maine than it is in a place like San Francisco or Boston. There's, you know, just a much different situation. But I want to ask you this question. Over the years when I've seen developments proposed, almost always one of the major objections among neighbors is that it will increase traffic. And I'm wondering about the conversation around that.
Yeah, certainly here in the Boston area, I recognize that our transportation and public transportation infrastructure is different than in Maine. For my organization, A Better Cambridge, and for YIMBYs in cities with robust public transportation systems around the country, our focus is really on reducing parking requirements. Our goal is to focus housing production in existing communities near the benefits of public transportation. When you're building on top of one of the MBTA lines here in Boston, right, you know, adjacent to a station, our belief is that you should have very minimal to no parking requirements at all. That's something that in the greater Boston area, developers are anxious for. But because of those ongoing concerns that existing community members often have, they feel the need to build parking. We have found that in many new developments near transit around Boston, parking lots are not fully utilized. Studies have shown that transit-oriented development in higher density urban areas like Cambridge, like Boston, without parking does not significantly increase the number of parking permits or cars on the streets.
Interesting.
In fact, here in Cambridge, we've seen a steady reduction in the number of parking permits that have been issued by the city of Cambridge, even as we've seen substantial growth in housing over the last 10 years.
Interesting. And I understand that's a trend in many cities around the world. We do need to take another short break. When we return, more of your comments and questions. Please stay with us.
You make Maine calling possible, as does D.R. Struck Landscape Nursery on Route 202 in Winthrop, offering a selection of plants and flowers for Mother's Day.
Next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour, one of the most notorious mothers in literature, a woman who abandoned her husband and children to find herself. And that was way back in 1879.
There's something about Nora where she's doing something that everybody says you're not supposed to do that. I'm very quick to come to the defense of her.
Playwright Lucas Naith revisits A Doll's House next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour.
Join us for the New Yorker Radio Hour coming up Saturday afternoon at 2 and Sunday evening at 11 o'clock. And coming up in about 20 minutes in our 2 o'clock Public Affairs Hour, World Affairs and the Ambassador of the United Arab Emirates to Russia discussing what does it mean to be Muslim today and why facing hatred and propaganda head-on is the path to engendering trust and tolerance. Again, that's coming up at 2 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, ways in which developers and community activists can work together toward a common goal. In the studio with me, Beth Bupley. I'm having such a hard time with your name, Beth, and I apologize.
I can't imagine, Jennifer.
She's an environmental attorney with BCM Environmental and Land Law. Oh, I'm so embarrassed. Nancy Smith, the executive director of Grow Smart Maine, and on the line with us from Boston, Jesse Kanson-Benanev. He is the founder and chairman of A Better Cambridge. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Before we go back to the calls, I know, Nancy, you want to talk about a resource that you have, that Grow Smart Maine has for communities.
We do. First, I want to know if I get extra points for having the last name Smith.
Yes.
There's points there. All right. So one of the things Grow Smart provides, and they're easy to find on our website, are educational briefs. Jesse mentioned accessory apartments. There's one there on how to do them and why it matters and why it helps young people and elder people live in our communities and continue to. And then also one newly released on farm-friendly communities and what farms can communities can do to support farming. The one that's most relevant, I think, to today's conversation was just posted this week, and it's called Bridging the Divide, and there are three tools. These tools came out of a process. Last June, we had a forum in Portland. About 125 people came to really dig into why there was this tension between neighborhood associations and the developers. The outcome of that day and workshops and a series of meetings afterwards was three different documents that can be found on the website. One of them is advice for developers on how to hold effective neighborhood meetings. Have them early. Make sure that you've got broad outreach. One of the things we heard frequently was renters are not often informed of what's happening, and they, of course, are as much a part of the community as the property owners. Secondly is how there's advice for citizens on how to be engaged, and we've talked about that early on. One of the pieces that has come to mind in this conversation is a workshop I had about a year ago on marketing. When people are marketing and want you to buy their products, they want to make it easy, cheap, and popular to buy your products. When we look at YIMBYism and with smart growth, it's not quite easy, cheap, and popular, but you want the developer, for the developer, you want to make it cost-effective, predictable, and, yes, popular to do the kind of developments that are that are wanted in the community. And so that's part of the Bridging the Divide piece for the community members. And then finally, I think the most fascinating one is an explanation of the decision tree that a developer goes through to make a development. Why did he choose that place? Why did she choose this kind of development? How do the pieces fit together? What are the financial constraints? How does physics determine how tall the building can be, let alone what the ordinances are? So I think that when people who are interested really want to learn what it takes in the developer's process, so that, again, the developers in Maine, for the most part, live in the community. They want to be proud of what they've done. They also need to earn a profit because it is what they do for a living. But these Bridging the Divide pieces, I think, give tools for everybody on minimizing the tension and really figuring out how to work together.
We're going to go to Don, who's calling from Machias. Hi, Don. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Thank you. I've had 35 years of experience in public and private development, particularly with the Norwalk Redevelopment Agency in Norwalk, Connecticut, where they did the South Norwalk Redevelopment, which back in the 80s was a really big deal, a multi-million dollar deal, to revitalize South Norwalk. And that took a number of years, but the YIMBY, the Yes in My Backyard, really took over there. And it was because the city educated the people in South Norwalk, because it was a poor area, about what was going on and invited them into that process. Another project that I worked on, which was a 42-unit low and moderate income housing in a residential area, got a lot of resistance until we invited the neighbors into that process, educated them, answered their questions, and actually made them part of the original board to oversee the project.
So it sounds like, Don, that you all used the bullet points from Grow Smart Maine before they existed. You could have written them.
Quite possibly. But the other thing is that when I did come up here to Maine, I took the job as city planner for the city of Rockland, Maine, and worked for about a year and a half to redefine and redo the zoning for the harbor. And there again, I was go out to the people who were on the harbor, most of which was manufacturing at the time, talk to them about how we could make things easier for them to either move or to upgrade their properties, and to get the zoning changed so that at some time in the future that the harbor could be beautified and there would be public access to the water. That has happened when MBNA came in and had a flush of money for towns along the Midcoast area. And the harbor in Rockland now looks nothing like it did back in the early 90s.
Well, Don, I appreciate it. I'm gonna say goodbye because we have so many calls coming in and we're at the end of the hour. But thank you so much for calling and lending your perspective, Don. I want to quickly go to an email from Jack, who lives in Knightville in South Portland, and he's talking about the five-story development that would go in. And his frustration is that this is in violation of our comprehensive plan that I have helped work on over the last 20 years, that it would be a zoning change. As myself and my neighbors are not against the plan. We want responsible development, but are against zone changes. Beth, all over Maine 20 years ago, towns created comprehensive plans. They did it for a reason. The comprehensive plan was supposed to be the plan. Now all over Maine, people are looking for zoning changes to those comprehensive plan. You can understand why Jack is frustrated.
Yes, yes. And we hear, and that is not an uncommon complaint, that a proposed zone change or development is in conflict with a comprehensive plan. What I think everyone has to keep in mind is that comprehensive plans serve as a policy guiding document. They should be a forward-looking document for a community. And zoning needs to change and adapt and move. And none of this is static. All of it is part of a growth process. And when I say growth process, I mean from the policy but also the regulatory standpoint. And if an area has grown and developed and gotten to a point where it's time to revisit whether the zone, the zoning district is appropriate, then the community engages in that. And sometimes it's a specific development project that draws drives that dialogue. It doesn't mean that it is truly in conflict with a comprehensive plan, because someone else might be able to point to a section of the comp plan and say, you know, actually it fits. It's perfectly in keeping with these other goals that are set forth.
I think I want to add what I hear beyond the issue is a sense that his work, the caller's work on the comp plan, isn't appreciated and respected. And I think, again, it goes back to when volunteer citizens work on a comp plan, they volunteer on the planning board, as you do, Beth. Mm. We want to make sure that that's acknowledged in the process. And that may be simply framing the issue when it comes to that development, to acknowledge a lot of work has gone into the comp plan. There's complaints sometimes. There are reports that just sit on a shelf, and we want to see them used.
We're going to go to Sally, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Sally. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. I would consider myself a YIMBY, and I also really appreciated thinking about it as a new integrationist movement. Mm. I think that's really important. But I do still struggle thinking about the implications of gentrification and change on people right across and on families. So it keeps coming back for me to this question of who it's for. And I think that if as part of the development process, we kind of kept asking ourselves that, it would really make a big difference. I wonder, too, kind of as a second part to this question, I wonder all of those units that are being built in Portland, I'm not sure that many of them are more than one bedroom, and I'd be curious how many of them are targeted at families.
Sure. In a second, Jesse, I want to get to you and the idea of asking who is the development for, but we'll get the more specific question from Beth. What kind of units are going in Portland, and you know, what does this mean for sort of the overall fabric of the community?
So I can't give you specifics of how many are one bedroom, two bedroom, et cetera. I gave you some rough numbers that I got from planning staff earlier today, so that I was prepared to respond.
Sure.
To some
I think,
of those
though,
questions.
That, and tell me that this is right, is that the gut feeling that people have is that these apartments are built for young professionals who are maybe in their first, second, third job out of college, or retirees who are leaving that big house they raised the kids in and moving into the city. Would you say that that's accurate?
I would say that's an accurate perception. Is that reality? I'm not sure that's true, because one of the things that I'm hearing is that the millennial generation is not looking to have that large 2,000-plus square foot house in the suburbs. They want the smaller, they want the livability, they want the walkability of being in the urban environment, and they don't want the large house.
And Jesse, I want to turn to you with Sally's question about, is the YIMBY movement promoting this idea that developers say, who is this project for, or is a good developer always asking that question?
The YIMBY movement is promoting housing for everyone. We are advocates of affordable, subsidized housing funded under the various state and federal affordable housing programs. We also support the production of market-rate housing in cities. You know, the perception is similar in the Boston region. I mean, certainly we see around here a large number of luxury developments that go up along the Boston waterfront or in Cambridge, places like that. We don't oppose the production of those units, because people are moving to our cities, people are occupying those units, and we believe that if we don't build those units, that will create more competition among existing residents, often lower income residents, for that existing stock of housing.
Sure, supply and demand, yeah.
Supply and demand is real. I mean, there is the concept called filtering that believes that every new unit built today will become the affordable, naturally occurring affordable unit of tomorrow. We believe in that within the YIMBY movement.
Okay.
We do want affordable housing. We also want market rate housing. We want housing for all.
And I'd love to build on that with two thoughts. One is, you know, this issue of gentrification is real. We need to address it. Mm-hmm. There are low-income tax credits for producing this kind of housing as part of a development. I know Portland is looking at ordinances that would encourage it as well. Those federal tax credits, both for rehab of historic buildings and low-income, are at risk, the way that the talk mm-hmm. is in D.C.
right now. And
they're
losing their value.
And we, exactly. And we need to pay attention to that. That's a whole other discussion. The other piece I wanted mm-hmm. to point out to Sally is, if it is our parents who are buying the cool new smaller places in Portland, that is opening up their homes for the young families. And it's true, the suburban setting isn't as popular, but in Portland, if we're looking just to Portland for this example, or the Portland area, there are plenty of 4 and 5 bedroom homes that are being opened up and made available because of this shift in housing as seniors choose the smaller spaces.
All right, so I'm going to try to squeeze one more call in. What a quick hour. We're going to go to Brian, who's calling from Aroostook County. Hi, Brian. Go ahead.
Hi there. Good afternoon. Good subject. I have about 15 years of planning experience regionally and locally outside of Maine. And my concern is that too often we see a record of justice based on affordability, and especially in the criminal courts. But my concern is that too often zoning works for the common man, and it goes on that way until somebody with the money wants it changed. So that puts into question the long-term value of zoning.
Okay, so Beth, you're on the planning board in Portland. How big of a factor is a developer's pocketbook?
Well, I don't think it's the prime... It's certainly a factor, but the pocketbook depends on what it is the developer is doing. So, for example, Community Housing of Maine, you know, you would not consider that a developer who has a huge pocketbook to build a lot of housing, but they are building housing. They are involved in providing housing, and they are specifically targeted at providing affordable housing. So I'm not quite sure what the caller's concern is and question is, but I think the development is not always strictly driven by the pocketbook.
I might quickly add that I believe that zoning that perpetuates a reduced supply of housing and makes it difficult to create opportunities for young adults, for low-income people, for seniors to live in and afford units, I don't think that is zoning that works for the common man.
All right. Well, that's going to be the last word today. I'm sorry. I apologize to all the callers we left hanging. Lots of people wanting to get in on this conversation today. The voice you just heard, Jesse Canson-Bananev, is the founder and chairman of A Better Cambridge. He's the keynote speaker next week at the Merida Conference on YIMBY. Beth Bupley is an environmental attorney with BCM Environmental and Land Law, and Nancy Smith is the executive director of Grow Smart Maine. Jonathan Woodward ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as a link to our audio archives at mainecalling.net. Today's show will be rebroadcast tonight at 8. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, join me and our culinary experts for the latest from the world of food. We will be talking about seasonal produce, seafood, food festivals, and more. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.